I don't know.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Merrick and all the... Nope.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gifts and... Hi, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco. Computer show.
Yes. There it comes.
I'm Dave Enright. Yeah, I'm there's Steve Ray. Hiccup in the system. Doesn't like the cold weather. What can I say?
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We may or may not be bringing you the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299.
Assuming the phone works.
Toll-free 800-790-0415. Back in December, Microsoft gave out a small warning. It stated that it planned to rebrand its entire productivity line from Microsoft 365 Office to Microsoft 365 Copilot. And people didn't really get with the idea. Well, seems Microsoft didn't really care and has begun rebranding everyone's apps to be more Copilot focused. Copilot, of course, is their AI. God forbid you don't have AI. This includes changing the Microsoft Office 365 the Microsoft 365 Office logo from the blue hexagon to the Copilot logo with the small M365 tag at the bottom right. Longtime fans of Microsoft will know that Office has gone through a few name changes already. So why is it going through yet another one? Well, it's no secret that Microsoft is going all in on its AI initiative. In fact, Microsoft 365 users recently learned that the subscription price is going up for the first time in 13 years purely because Microsoft is adding Copilot integration into the base plan instead of relying on people subscribing to Copilot Pro.
Too bad if you don't need that.
Yeah, too bad you don't need it. You're getting it. Good and hard. There's a very high chance that we're only just scratching the surface with this rebrand. After all, given how the company changed the logo to match Copilot, there's a good chance it will want people to use the suite as a Copilot-powered app first, and a productivity app second, because productivity is less important to them than you using their AI. The question is, will the people warm up to the idea of Office putting the AI tools ahead of basic functionality? We can't say for sure right now, but we can say that if it doesn't pan out, Microsoft will have to do a lot of rebranding. Of course, people who have kept a close eye on Microsoft know that its recent push to add its AI assistant to everything. The rollout began in January 2024 when Microsoft announced that it was renaming its mobile browser to Microsoft Edge, AI Browser. Fast forward a year and we've seen the release of dedicated Copilot PCs, partnerships with AI companies, and even a new Copilot key on keyboards and laptops. LG and Samsung agreed to add Copilot to their smart TVs because, you know, when you're watching TV, the thing you need most is AI. And given how hard Microsoft is pushing its AI tool, it's likely that this won't be the last time we see it arrive outside of Microsoft's product range. We'll just have to wait and see if the gamble pays off or if we're headed for a Cortana 2.0. Luckily, LibreOffice is still free. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft arbitrarily renames Office.
And changes it on your computer after you already bought it.
Force feeds it to you.
Yeah.
And your choices are wonderful. Meh, arose by any other name. What the actual heck, Microsoft? Oh, that's where it went. And don't use it, don't care. So far, we've got 27 votes. And don't use it, don't care is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by what the actual heck, Microsoft. And of course, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, where you can vote in the poll, and then you can join us by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Sorry, I would say, and I'm just taking a wild stab, I'll bet you 80% of our audience out there could get away with using either OpenOffice or one of the other freebies. Yep. Save themselves a ton of money. Get free storage because OpenOffice or even Google, products, Google Docs and all that, is free storage up there and not notice a difference. I mean, how many different ways can you form a letter or do a spreadsheet?
Right.
Yep.
And like I said, maybe there are the exceptions. So, yeah, all you other folks, well, it's going to be able to do this and this. Like I said, I only said 80%. I didn't say 100%. I said 80%. And that I still stick with that, you know, that they could get away with that free product and not know the difference and save themselves some money.
Yep. I completely agree. Yeah. Whether you get LibreOffice or Google Docs or I cannot remember what
iWork.
iWork.
They don't use that brand anymore, but yeah, Apple's. So I call it Apple's Office.
Yeah, Apple Office.
Yeah, see,
You know, those are free, and as Dave said, they give you Google gives you 15 gig of free storage. Why would you not take it? Google gives you completely free storage. If you save things in their format, it doesn't count against your 15 gig.
And that's what I've been doing since, for decades now. And I know you've been doing it when you were doing the news articles. Everything was saved up there. And same here. Any of my documents, and the cool thing about it is I can separate them by my different email addresses. Because I've got one email address for my own stuff, and then stuff for my hobby, which is ham radio. I keep that separate.
Really? You're into ham radio?
A little bit.
When did that happen? It's not really a hobby. It's more of an obsession.
Thank you.
But yeah, so there are a huge number of alternative office systems, most of which do not force feed you AI. Now, AI is great for some things, but most people don't need it.
Or don't even know what the heck it'll do for
them. Right. And don't know how to use it effectively, and don't have a need for it.
Mm-mm.
You know, if you're basically writing invoices and you've been using the same template for 20 years, you don't need to ask AI how to do things. You know, Google does the same thing. When I cut and paste something, up pops a little thing that says, "Do you want to enhance this with AI?" No.
Get out of my face.
Get off of my machine. And I haven't bothered to try to see if that's turn-offable yet.
Well, I did get a kick out of a new TV commercial I saw where, well, so AI has always been meant artificial intelligence, meaning an actual thinking, usually robot, humanoid robot. And then when Apple came out with theirs, it was Apple Intelligence, and they got some, you know. So now there's an attorney doing TV commercials, and it's AI it. Is attorney intelligence.
Yeah,
I've seen it.
Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, I've been using AI for 35 years.
Right. There's situations where AI is great. So, for example, I know a number of programmers who use AI quite regularly to create a snippet of code that would take them hours to figure out. But the problem with AI is you have to be able to properly articulate the problem.
And maybe adjust after it's even done.
And adjust it after it's done. So it can take you longer to get the result you're looking for than to do it by hand. But AI is here to stay.
We're seeing a lot of people in programming will ask a programming question or put a piece of code in that's buggy, and because the AI models have basically ingested every single programming language manual, they're usually pretty good about either fixing this problem or showing you the way to go yourself. So we've heard from a lot.
To correctly code it.
Yeah, we've heard from a lot of programmers. In fact, have you ever done the Advent of Code? In December, they do like an advent calendar, but every day there's a new programming puzzle to solve. And some of the people were solving it in 8 and 10 seconds.
Sure, because they were using AI.
You're right. They type the question into AI and get the answer back. So they're you know, disqualifying those people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people were using it to you know, work out something tricky or why doesn't this code work and paste it in there and... And so for its use, but going back, it hallucinates by making inferences that aren't there. Yeah,
it hallucinates, and the problem with that, by hallucinating, what we mean is AI lies. It makes stuff up. They call it hallucinating because that's politer than lying.
Because we're anthropomorphizing everything.
And they hate that.
They hate that, yeah.
But the point is that you get, it can lie to you. So, for example, about 80% of the time, if I type a particular coding question into ChatGPT or into Google's, whatever they're calling it, AI.
Claude, is it?
I don't remember. I get the right answer. Or I get something that's close enough that I can play with it and figure it out. But if I just type it into Google, you get that thing that comes up, that AI result before anything else.
Yeah.
It is always, and I'm saying always, wrong. It gives me, let's say I'm in Python, it gives me a library that does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
Or it gives me a function inside a library that does not exist.
You can say, no, that's wrong. Because Steve Gibson had a story about this when he's doing assembly code. You can say, no, that's wrong. And then it says, and he got mad because it said, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. And gave him a new code that worked. And it remembered that until he closed the window because all the AI learnings are frozen.
Right.
So Google's is Gemini, Anthropic is Claude.
Oh, right.
So every companies you've never heard of have their own AI.
Right. And everybody's doing it. And, of course, the other thing about AI is it is incredibly expensive in terms of processing power, electricity.
Microsoft is reconditioning Three Mile Island to bring one of their reactors back online so they can power Copilot. Hopefully not the one that melted.
that would be a good thing if it wasn't that one, yeah. But it is very expensive, and that, of course, continues to generate heat, which is bad for the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So, we're seeing, for years, Google, Microsoft, all of these companies they've got data centers in the Arctic, and they've got data centers on ships. They've got data centers underwater. Next, they'll have data centers in space if they can figure out how to
deal with
the lag time.
They've been using, pulling water out of the ocean to help cool their data centers, and now that's affecting marine life because the water is warmer than it's supposed to be.
Yep.
There was a question about that with the California fires, too. Why aren't they using ocean water to scoop up? Why are they going to lakes? Because you don't want to put all that salt in your forest because, you might put the fire out, but you'll kill everything later.
Right. Biblically, you salt the ground to make sure nothing grows for generations.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that to all of the California trees land. So forest areas. And so you don't, you got to be more careful than that. You can't just decide, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to scoop up this and use it. All right. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hold on.
Oh, sorry. Dave was...
You beat him back to the chair.
Dave, I beat Dave back to the chair. How are you, Fred?
Good. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you? I don't know. I already asked you.
Yeah.
What's up?
A couple things. But just on a lighter note, I wonder how much money Microsoft could have saved by not spending all that money on rebranding.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And can I ask AI how to turn off AI?
That's probably, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
So when you do a Google search, the first thing it gives you typically is an AI-generated result. So let's ask Google, turn off Google AI results. Here are the AI results for turning off AI results. let's see. You can also go to the three dots, change your search engine, and unselect AI overview. So, yeah, you can.
Okay. So, that's good to know. Now can I turn off Microsoft?
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
I have not had Microsoft, as I've said a number of times, I think, when I've called in, that the only thing I have it for is a piece of software that I use for work.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the week, the machine sits idle. But on a more technical note, I have a GoPro camera that I've been using for about 10 months, actually a little less than 10. I have a SanDisk Extreme 256 gigabyte V30 chip, or V30 micro SD. And recently, at some random times, I can't figure out any kind of rhyme or reason to it, the GoPro has been telling me that it can't record at that level because I need to put in a V30 or higher chip. One of those things.
Yeah. How long have you had this SanDisk chip?
About 9 months. A little over 9, less than 10, somewhere. I don't know.
So you've either got a problem with the chip or with the reader. And the easiest way to determine which is to buy a new chip.
Okay.
If the problem goes away, then you know it was the old mm-hmm. chip. These things wear out, and it depends on how much you use the GoPro and how often you... See, on SSDs, which is what this SanDisk chip is...
Yeah.
What's important is the write cycles. You can read them forever.
Okay.
But every time you write them, they degrade a little.
Well, typically I've been, you know, obviously it only holds 256 and a GoPro at 5.3K resolution is intensive.
And most of SSDs have something called wear leveling, where... There's extra spare blocks on the drive. So a 256 gig drive might have, say, 270 blocks on it. And so if it feels that one block is wearing out, it will write data to other blocks. But eventually they all do wear out. And that's what SpinRite is really good at refreshing SSDs, because it can read those blocks that are really marginal and move them into the spare blocks. There's been reports of 90% speed improvement on SSDs after a SpinRite scan.
But the other thing is, you may just simply not have enough space for the things you want to record on a 256K chip.
I empty it every time it gets near full. I offload the files to a larger drive. I have an external hard drive, 4 terabyte hard drive that I use. And then I start fresh. You know, batteries are full, the SD is emptied, and I'm wondering if just simply reformatting it would help.
It could.
Can't hurt.
Because reformatting will also map out bad sectors.
Okay. And I've also heard of a brand name called Gigastone. Is that reliable?
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah,
okay. It was on Amazon. It was on Amazon. But I might just have to replace that, because I'm getting that message even with the disc less than half full, and I thought maybe it was because it was so bitter cold, or
that could be part of it too. Because one of the reasons you might get that message is because the SD card is slow.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying, is it's too slow. Get a V3 or higher, and I go on. It is a V30 rather. It is a V30, and I have not found a micro SSD that is higher than V30. Their regular SD is V60. But I might not be looking in the right places.
Yeah, and also 4K 60 frame would take about 50 gigs an hour.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So every three hours I empty it.
Right.
I usually do it either when it's, you know, looking, because it's got a bar that says how full. It's got a estimated hour rating of how much time you have left.
Yep.
And when I fire it up and it looks like, oh yeah, it's getting there, I'll just throw it on the computer and change it or drag it over to my external hard drive.
It does look like Gigastone is a brand that GoPro themselves recommend. They have a list of SanDisk, Lexar, PNY, Samsung, Kingston, and Gigastone.
I might give it a try.
Yeah.
As I said, couldn't wait.
Yep.
So one other thing, I don't know if you can address that in a short time that we have, is I'm looking for smart devices, smart switches that do not require internet.
Impossible. They have to talk to the let me back off a little bit. Very unlikely, because they want to be able to talk to your devices over the internet so you can control them.
Okay. Can I just,
there are some that use a home hub where you set up, you have a hub in your house and then all the devices talk to it.
But that's still over the
Well, they talk to it over your LAN and then you can talk to the hub over the internet.
Well, I don't need to turn off a light switch from outside. I'm quite capable of just turning the light off when I go home, when I get home, what, either way, whatever. But I do like the idea of being able to do some control. Maybe before I get up in the morning, I want to turn the heat up or various things that I want to do without, or even putting them on a timer, but within my system at home. I can do a Wi-Fi. I can do a Wi-Fi at home without internet.
That's was what I was going to suggest. Pick up your secondary channel, for example. Disconnect it from the internet. And now it just works internally in your house.
Okay.
We got to take a break.
One more question when we come back.
Yes, hang on the line. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Fred from Rochester, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. You still there, Fred? Fred?
So yes, I am. I'm here.
Okie doke. Go ahead.
Okay. I received a warning from Venmo that somebody by the name of K, just the letter K, on a mobile device was logging into my Venmo. It was in Texas. So locked down my Venmo, had to send picture ID, me holding the picture ID, all this stuff that about 3 days later they reopened it. And I logged in. And then I looked at the current devices that are recognized.
Right.
And seems my device was in Texas. So the first one may not have been an actual attempt. It may have been just some crazy thing that said I was in Texas.
So sometimes your location can get confused by the Wi-Fi network, but more commonly the cellular network. So where the cellular network joins the internet may not be anywhere near you. So we see that sometimes, but it's usually somewhere close. In our office in Victor, almost everything says Canandaigua.
Okay.
Which, it's 25 minutes, but
when I was when I was.
I've had from Buffalo to Syracuse locations of connection.
Yeah.
I've never had anything Texas, and I deleted it and repeated it several times, and it was still in Texas. What, you know, my only concern with that is I don't care what they think I am, as long as they do the job. But when I see a location that's so far out of whack, I worry about a hack.
Yep.
Which
and some of those messages are fake, trying to get you to click on the link in a panic to go to a fake Venmo login site. I've been getting a bunch from PayPal lately. So someone bought something and they're requesting an invoice.
Right.
So the message really comes from PayPal, but the contents of the message are fake.
Mm.
So somebody submitted a fake invoice. But yeah, they're trying to panic you into clicking on that thing. So it's really tough to know. One of the things you can do, what is that website that shows your current location?
A lot of the
IP scanners, what is my IP, will get your location data from your IP address, but especially on cellular, that isn't necessarily correct, especially if you don't have location data turned on your phone.
Okay.
When our furnace was broken, we had to go to a hotel. Local hotel, and I did a check, and it said we were in Kansas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's the hotel internet, probably is some central location. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just checked right now, and it says we're in Fairport.
Yeah.
On our connection here in Greece.
At least that's the same state, but
yeah.
I guess the biggest thing is I wanted to thank you guys and let everybody else know that. If it were not for your teaching us how to be careful and teaching us how not to click on things, I might have, in a panic, gotten scammed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you saved me some money.
Our pleasure.
Nice.
But, I mean, that's the biggest takeaway from it was that stuff isn't always the way it seems, and you have taught listeners how to be cautious.
And that's what makes it very hard to know the real stuff from the fake stuff, because the fake stuff is so close to the real stuff, and the real stuff is sometimes looks fake.
And the other thing is don't leave a lot of money in those things unless you need it there. Right? So, you know, in for example, PayPal, when I get over a certain amount, I move it to my checking account. In Venmo, gotcha. I do the same thing so that, you know, if somebody hits me, okay, they hit me for a little bit of money, but not, you know, huge amounts.
And that's where we've also tried to, over the years, teach people not to be what I call click happy.
Mm-hmm. Click happy, exactly.
Don't panic. Take a minute. Think. Breathe.
Yeah. Sit back for a second and kind of reread what you're looking at to make sure that you thoroughly understand, because too often, you know, we panic. Got to do this, got to do it. And it's like, no, wait a minute. Step back for a second and just recompose yourself.
Unless you're friends with Jason Statham.
Yeah, right.
I have received invoices from PayPal, and I got one that was the Geek Squad that were totally fake.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the thing you... And the thing you want to do with those is, instead of clicking on the link, I'm talking to everybody else because I know you know this, Fred. When you get one of those, don't click on the link. Go to the actual website.
Don't call the number. Yep. Don't call a number. Don't click on the link.
Right. Instead, go to the website. So go to your PayPal or go to your Venmo and take a look at it there. If you don't see a charge there...
Yeah, I got one just yesterday that said, oh, there's a $449 charge going to your PayPal. If you want to dispute this, please call this number.
And
I automatically deleted that, went over onto my computer, logged into my PayPal account. Guess what?
Not there.
This $449 charge wasn't there.
And if you do do any real purchasing through PayPal, you know that every invoice they send you has a description of what you bought and how much it is.
Yep.
They have a description, but of something I didn't buy.
Right.
Right.
I call Venmo directly.
Yep.
I have not been, you mentioned about taking money out of it, I have not been fortunate enough to receive any money. All the money I've had is going out.
Yeah.
I have a zero balance in Venmo, and it takes it directly out of my checking account.
Right.
When I send some to somebody, which is handy. I've even since COVID, I've been paying my rent via Venmo.
Nice.
I was probably one of the last people to write a check. But it's just, you know, one of the first things I look at is the sender.
Yep.
And if it's a Gmail account, no, that ain't right. Venmo, PayPal, Geek Squad, none of them are going to send a Gmail.
Right.
And there's an option. It's not on my viewing my emails on the phone, but if I view my emails on the desktop through the browser, there's an option to label it as phishing, not just scam.
Right.
Or spam, rather, but actually phishing.
Right.
And I don't know whether it does any good or not, but I've been submitting those to...
It does good in the long run, absolutely.
Because it's pretty much like chasing your tail. They keep changing their email addresses. But, so I have you to thank for that, and everybody else should recognize that and not just be listening to this radio broadcast, but sending it via PayPal even.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Fred. We appreciate that. We got to move on. We got other calls.
Thank you. Take care.
Have fun. Bye.
I just looked at my Venmo account and it's $3.42, and I don't know why.
I got to say, when Fred was talking about his V30 chip, I went and looked for V60. I found the Lenovo 2 terabyte V60 card for $25 from eBay. I also found the exact same card on AliExpress for 61 cents. I suspect that's a scam.
Yes.
I don't know what causes me to think that, but I think that.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bruce from Fairport, New York. What's up, Bruce?
Going back to the emails, the scam emails, I've always checked the reply to, I know the sender's email address.
Yeah.
And if it's not related to PayPal or something like that, am I doing it wrong?
No, you're doing fine.
But there's a new scam out where I can use PayPal to send you an invoice. And so the message comes from PayPal legitimately, but the invoice I sent you is a scam, and I'm hoping you won't notice and you'll pay me.
Right. So that's why we suggest that instead of clicking on anything in the email, you instead log on to PayPal separately and check it there.
To verify the contents of the message as well as who it really came from.
Right. Most of the time you will find that there is no invoice. There is no anything from PayPal at all. That is a more... You're right. 90% of the time checking the sender will tell you what's going on. But there is this new scam... So you should check directly with PayPal.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. Thank you, Bruce.
I have a feeling, though, that it would show as an invoice in your PayPal account. Someone requested money from you.
Yeah, it might.
Fake.
But you would look at it and say, I didn't authorize, I didn't sell this person anything.
Yep.
I'm not getting anything from this person.
And then once you're at the PayPal website, legitimately, there's probably a report phishing at the bottom of the
right.
of the message.
Right. In general, and this is why we say today, while you're sitting around comfortable, you haven't got any pressure on you, go to each of your money sites. Go to your bank website. Go to your PayPal. Go to your Venmo. Go to whatever you use, and bookmark them so you know you're at the real address. So when you get one of these things that might be a scam, instead of clicking on a link in the email or in the message, you instead go to your browser, use the bookmark you've created, which you know goes to the real website, and check it that way. That way you don't fall into the trap of clicking on a link that is almost exactly correct. But if you're in that panic hurry, you don't see that it's not 100% right.
Yeah. One of them I got once was, it was paypa1.com.
Oh, right, in the right font, that one looks like an L.
Yep.
That's why I say never use a sans serif font.
Yep.
Never.
Yep. One of the other things folks should take time to do is, and most folks with the phones, whether it's Android or Mac, is set up a wallet so that you can do tap and pay. Tap and pay is far more secure than you swiping that strip down through there. More information is given out and less hacks are happening because of the tap and pay.
Yeah. Tap and pay sends a random credit card number to that store.
A one-time credit card number.
So when that store gets hacked, which they probably could, and
probably
maybe will, your real credit card number doesn't get used.
I had one customer come in that thanked me for telling, because they didn't understand what I was talking about, and I showed them on their phone. They took the time to set it up. Since then, and this has been about 3-4 months now, has not been hacked. Before, she had been hacked twice within 2 weeks.
Yep.
And it's almost never you. It's almost always the store you go to, the restaurant you go to.
Every day we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America.
Pay attention to what the credit card reader looks like at your gas station. So if it looks different, because one of the big things is a credit card skimmer, they'll put a new thing over the slot. So when you put your credit card into the slot, the bad guy gets your credit card number too. And then they'll often have a little camera in it, pinhole camera, that can watch you type your PIN.
Yep. So
let
me hesitate to say that 99.9% of the servers in America are entirely honest.
Yep.
But there's always a bad egg somewhere.
Yeah, there's always that 1%.
And now they're doing it, as Steve said, now they're doing it with technology, putting the fake readers on over the regular reader. So it doesn't look any different. But it's like a millimeter thicker.
And someone could have broken in, and that happened at Target. Someone broke into their payment company.
Right.
That Target was using for all their payments.
Well, my wife just had to, about, what, 2 months ago now? 2 months ago, go through getting a new card. Why? Because all of a sudden we got a call, said, did you just charge $89 at Jersey Mike's in Albany? And we go, No, we're sitting here in Rochester. So they alerted her. So, of course, they had to shut down the card. She had to get a new one. And that's what finally convinced her. I was telling her for the long time, you got to do tap and pay. You got to do tap and pay. It's not that hard to set up.
Right.
It's very easy. So now everything she does, tap and pay, tap and pay.
I'll tell you what's hard about tap and pay, because I tapped and paid this morning. When your hands are so cold that the fingerprint reader doesn't register you.
Oops.
That's hard.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Or the reader isn't long enough in the store to stick your arm in the window.
Right, right. For your thing. Yeah. I should have used that. That would have been easier.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of drive up restaurant windows now will have a reader on a cord where they can stick it out the window for you. Right. Yeah, so it's using a wallet in your phone, Android or Apple, is a lot safer because it only sends a one-time random credit card number.
And you can put multiple credit cards in and pick the one you want to use now.
Mm-hmm.
You can also...
It doesn't even have to be credit cards.
Right.
I've got a Wegmans card. I've got my Cinemark movie card.
It could be PayPal.
Yeah.
It could be all kinds. It could be any of those things. And you are therefore much safer using those than you are using a real physical credit card. And as Steve said, both Android and iOS have a wallet that you can set up and use pretty easily once it's set up. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve? Steve? Hold on, Steve.
Nope, lost Steve.
We lost Steve. Poor Steve.
I hung up.
We hardly knew him.
Steve?
He was such a nice guy, too.
I'm getting a severe weather alert on my phone. I thought it wasn't supposed to be bad for a couple more days. Okay, where does my phone think it is?
Well, that's the other. I was just going to ask that. All right, do we have Steve now?
Yes, you do.
Excellent. What's up, Steve?
I have been trying to set up a computer for a friend who lives outside of Chicago. I'm trying to, she's part of my friends and family thing. I'm trying to log into Microsoft Office so she can use my Word and things like that. And when I try to log in, I get a Windows security making sure it's you, and they're asking for a PIN. I have no idea what this PIN is. I've gone to the settings and sign-in options. I have turned off the improved security, allow Windows Hello sign-in. That's off. I've done reboots after all these things. I've tried signing in with my Windows credentials and her Windows credentials, and I just cannot get past this making sure it's you, we need a PIN.
Well, what is asking for it? Is it the OS or is it the Microsoft's website?
It's the Microsoft website using, it's Microsoft website.
So that wouldn't have anything to do with the Windows Hello PIN? But and you're sure it's saying PIN, because it's usually authenticator code or text phone number.
You can set up a Microsoft PIN in your Microsoft account.
Okay. Right.
It looks like I somehow got Hello turned on, where it wants a fingerprint or face recognition.
That's on the computer itself. Right. That's nothing to do with your Microsoft account. Or do they do it on the account now, too?
So what you need to do is in the Start menu, under Settings, under Accounts, select the Sign-In Options and add the PIN.
To a PIN that you know.
Okay, I'm there right now, and I don't see an option to add a PIN.
Are you click add? You should see PIN, and under that should be add
or change if there is one.
Okay, sign in options. Hello face. Hello fingerprint. Hello PIN.
There you go.
Okay.
It says PIN.
Your PIN is all set up to sign into Windows Apps and Services, but it doesn't tell me what the PIN is.
Because you already told it. Somebody already told it. So there's got to be a change PIN command.
But then you're going to need the old PIN.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, and I don't know. So this is a computer I picked up. It's a refurbished I picked up for somebody, someplace. It came with, obviously, Windows installed.
But was it already set up, or did it go through all the setup instructions for you?
No, it was basically set up.
All right. Where the PIN number is.
So in that PIN text box there, you should have an option for I forgot my PIN.
Right, and I've tried that too. Go ahead.
And what happened when you did that?
Okay, it says you should reset your PIN if you forgot it. If I say continue, it says, well, what's your password? I enter the password, and then it asks for the PIN.
Yeah, is it asking for the current PIN?
Yes.
Or is it asking you to set a new PIN?
No, it's asking for the current PIN.
Well, that's dumb.
And does it have an I forgot button on that page?
I have a forgot password, but that's, you know, when I put the password in, it says, okay, we need to prove it to you, what is your PIN? And I keep saying, I'm trying to reset the PIN. I don't know what the PIN is, and I don't know how to get past this.
Erase the computer and start over again.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
So I should be able to do a clean install.
You'll have to download. Wow. You can either download a Windows and ISO and create an installer flash drive, or depending on the brand of the computer, it may have a partition. Erase everything and start over again from a hidden partition.
Okay. So there's no way around this except starting over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the theory is it's supposed to let you set a new PIN, and I don't know why it's not in your case.
Yeah,
if it can't authenticate who he is.
His password should do that.
Password should do that, yeah.
It's
just try all the possible PINs. There's only 10,000 coming in. Well,
yeah. Well, no, there's a 999,999.
Yeah. If you changed it from a four-digit PIN to an alphanumeric PIN, yeah, then it's infinite.
Yeah, it's a catch 22. Put in the PIN. I can't put in the PIN, but it's
right. No, I get it. It really does look like it's time to wipe out that machine if you don't have much on it that
save you a lot of headaches and frustration because it's not going to happen.
Well, unfortunately, I spent a lot of time setting this sucker up.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, not your fault. I don't blame you this time.
Thank you.
Is it Windows 10 or Windows 11?
10. She wanted 10. She didn't want 11.
So it should be the same instructions.
Yeah, it is.
All right. I know you got to go.
Yeah, I'm afraid we do.
Unfortunately, I don't like what you said this time.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I apologize from the bottom of something.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is done. But do not travel too far away because there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray. A whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole nother hour of you. But only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a little bio break. Grab yourself a beverage, but don't go too far. Come on back. We're only going to be gone for a couple of minutes. And we will see you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Steve, you had a couple of extra thoughts about...
Well, I did find one community posting at Microsoft about removing the Windows 10 PIN. And you click forgot your PIN and then hit continue. And then the next PIN field that shows up, just hit cancel. And it will remove the PIN. That may work.
There you go. All right. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. 0415. It's only been a week since the last security update warning for Chrome browser users, and now we're back in the same place again. Google has confirmed two high severity security vulnerabilities impacting all users of the application across the Android, Linux, Mac OS, and Windows operating systems. Google is rolling out updates over the next few days and weeks. There's a new security threat hitting about 25% of all Android and iPhone users. It's a phishing threat, so be extra suspicious of, well, everything. Google has introduced a number of AI models that help prevent phishing attacks, and Apple has some advice on their website. Hackers are once again abusing Google Ads to spread malware, using a fake homebrew website to infect Macs and Linux devices with an info stealer that steals credentials, browser data, and cryptocurrency wallets, so be careful. Do you know I have never used homebrew for my Mac, by a Linux machine? A high-severity vulnerability in the 7-zip file archiver allows attackers to bypass Windows security and execute code on users' computers when extracting malicious files from nested archives. The patch is already available as 7-zip 24.09. That's 24.09. That number in Bayonne, 24.09. Ransomware gangs are increasingly adopting email bombing followed by posing as tech support in Microsoft Teams calls to trick employees into allowing remote access and install malware that provides access to the company network. So be much more suspicious. Reports are rolling in of threat actors infecting thousands of home and office routers, web cameras, and other internet-connected devices, and using those botnets to break into other systems. So check for updates on every device you own that connects to the internet in any way. I did that to my printer yesterday after I wrote this, and lo, there was an update. PowerSchool provides cloud-based...
Your printer shouldn't be connected to the internet, though. But there's hundreds of thousands of printers that are.
Right. PowerSchool provides cloud-based software to some 16,000 K-12 schools worldwide. PowerSchool revealed that it had experienced a network intrusion that resulted in, and I quote, unauthorized exportation of personal information. That's the information of 62 million students and 9.5 million teachers, including social security numbers, medical information, and home addresses. PowerSchool said it's offering 2 years of free credit monitoring to all those affected. There were a lot more security breaches this week, but they mostly are on business networks that have to be addressed by the system admins. Nothing is secure. Give us a call if you dare. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
That link is from Great Britain. So.
Ah!
All the words are spelled wrong.
They add U's. Was there like the great U surplus of 1853?
The other one is recognize. The British version is an S and the U.S. version is a Z.
Right.
I wondered why the spell checker was going nuts when I posted that. And I said, oh, it's Great Britain.
I didn't notice that yesterday, but then...
But all the information is the same.
I don't pay attention. Anyway, there's this just points up, like I said, there were a lot more security things I didn't get to. I try to keep each news thing to one sheet of paper. There were a lot I didn't get to. Most of them involve business networks, so systems admins should already be on top of this and be aware of everything. But if you work for a small company that doesn't have a full-time IT person, somebody should be checking your network.
There was a big Sonic Wall issue a week or two ago, and there were still like 40,000 unpatched Sonic Walls weeks after the Sonic published the update. They're sitting in a closet somewhere. The guy that was responsible for them is gone, and no one knows.
And one of the things that we often talk about, I think we addressed it earlier today, was the Internet of Things. You have everything is connected to the Internet now. Your printers, your thermostat, washing machine, your refrigerator.
And we tried searching for things that don't need internet, and all the articles I'm finding are 2020, 2021,
right.
Nothing recent.
Mm-hmm. So what we recommend you do is almost every router lets you set up more than one network So put your main computers on one network and your Internet of Things on a separate network that doesn't connect to your main network, so that people can't break into your main net. That doesn't stop them from breaking into your IoT devices, your Internet of Things devices, your thermostat and your refrigerator and all that stuff, and creating a botnet that goes out and tries to break into some other company. But it does prevent them from getting into your network and getting at your stuff.
Most routers will call that a guest network.
Right.
That only has access to the internet, doesn't have access to your private network, and devices can't see each other either, which is often a help. We read a story once about a clothes washer that was running really slow. And when the guy looked at his router logs, the clothes washer was sending 50 gigabytes of data a day out the internet. And the obvious conclusion was, well, it's a botnet.
Yep.
Someone got in and made it a botnet.
Yep. And usually you can reset them. And you know what? It doesn't hurt every once in a while to just reset all those devices. Yeah.
Go around and reset everything.
When does your, how do you reset the firmware in your washing machine?
Unplug it and plug it back in.
But everything nowadays has an app.
Yeah.
God forbid they sell you anything that doesn't have an app. So generally in the app, you can find some way to, A, update the firmware, B, take a look at what the firmware is, and C, reboot the device and reset the device.
Yeah.
So make sure that you check all those apps.
And they were wondering, why would you need an app for your washing machine? And both of the people were homeowners, had their own washing machines in their own house. So they got answers to say, well, I live in an apartment building, and you know, the wash takes an hour. I'm not going to sit in front of the machine. I'm going to go back to my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, when I did have to go to a laundromat, I sat in front of the machine. I didn't want anyone messing with my stuff.
We sat in front of the machine uphill both ways in the snow.
I brought a book. And then I brought my iPad when that became a thing.
You're right. the reality is that you have a lot of devices you don't think about. You can get light bulbs that are IoT devices.
Yep.
And they have an app to change the colors and all the yada yada.
One of the things that for the earlier caller, instead of looking for a smart device like a smart thermostat or a smart light bulb, try looking for programmable.
Right.
That way you can program schedules to it locally where it may not need the internet.
Right. And, oh, by the way, if you have a Ring doorbell, that absolutely connects to the internet. Oh, by the way, if you have an Alexa device, an Echo, an Amazon Echo, that connects to the internet. Your Google Home connects to the internet. You need to check those every once in a while. Update the firmware on those. Reboot those. Again, they all have apps that you use to do that with. Do it.
And don't buy a device that can't be updated.
Right.
Especially smart devices. You buy you see these really cheap, you know, four light bulbs for a dollar, and you can program them, and there's no updates. When an exploit is found, it will never be fixed.
Right. And one of the things that I just bought a new computer. I haven't set it up yet. But one of the very first things I'm going to do is go into the BIOS and see what updates are needed. That's before anything else. And that's an important thing to do on your home machine every once in a while. I will guarantee you, if you've owned your machine for more than 3 years, there's a BIOS update that you need.
Yep.
So be very careful. And BIOS updates are hard. If you don't have an uninterruptible power supply connected to your laptop or desktop, don't do a BIOS update.
Yeah. If the BIOS update goes wrong, you basically screwed the computer and have to replace the BIOS chip.
Right. So use an uninterruptible.
Which you're not gonna do because it's soldered in.
Right.
Most of the time.
So laptops are fine because they have a battery.
But don't do it if your battery's low. Wait till the battery
charges. Charge your battery up and plug it in. But if you lose power, it'll still finish the update. And if you have a desktop, make sure it's plugged into an uninterruptible power supply before you do any sort of update. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsburgh, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. Last week we were talking about one of your favorite subjects, backing up, and I neglected to ask one more question regarding backing up on an auxiliary hard drive or solid-state drive versus backing up to the cloud. Do you have any opinion on which is easier, safer, or does it make a difference?
Both.
Both is the correct answer.
Yeah. Generally, you don't need to pay the extra for a solid-state drive for backup because you don't care how fast it is. So just a regular spinning hard drive is fine.
Which you can get a terabyte drive for like $80.
Yeah. The likelihood of both that drive and your internal drive failing at the same time is low, but not zero.
Right, never zero.
So having a third backup in the cloud is also good. Most of the backup companies are like $5 a month per computer, so they're not that expensive. But we know a lot of people that have multiple hard drives, and just every week they swap the drive out, put it in a data safe, and have a rotating series of hard drives. So if one of them fails, you've got another one waiting for you.
It all depends on how wide your disaster sense goes.
Yeah.
If your computer dies, that's a very narrow disaster. And you've got a backup sitting on a shelf or whatever, and you can replace that. If your house goes, that's wider, and you want to have a backup outside your house. If your neighborhood goes, and we've seen that in California, quite definitely, you want some sort of cloud backup so that you can get your data wherever you end up. So it all depends on how wide your sense of security starts.
And there are companies that sell disaster-proof hard... Well, they call them disaster-proof. I'd say disaster-resistant.
Resistant.
Proof hard drives. So it's they're more expensive than a regular hard drive, but they're inside a fire-resistant, air-gapped case, so that if there is a fire, it can survive it. It can survive the water that will be doused on the fire to put it out. And so that...
But how much easier is it to just put it on the cloud?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I...
But that's a recurring payment rather than a one-time payment.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime is a huge amount of free storage on the cloud, isn't it?
For photos, you have unlimited photo storage if you are an Amazon Prime customer.
Oh.
But not for files.
Okay. But not for files. Google gives you the most for files. It's 15 gig. If you save now, if you have office-type documents, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all of that, and you upload it to Google Drive and you say convert to Google format, then it takes up zero space on Google's drive. I've got well over 150,000 documents on Google Drive, and I'm only using 7 gigs of storage, and that's for pictures inside documents and things like that. Because I've converted them on the fly as I was uploading them to Google's format. If I ever need them back down in a Word or Microsoft or OpenOffice Writer format, I can save as.
But that's a couple extra steps.
Mm-hmm.
And the automatic hard drive backup, automatic cloud backup can be a little easier, but of course you pay a little more for that. It's, you always pay more for the convenience.
Right. If you can take a look at the backup stuff on our Soundbites website at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, under some important links, the second one is backup, 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 you don't have enough. Mm-hmm. And that will lead you to a page that shows a whole bunch of backup plans, backup products for Windows and Macintosh and Linux and Android and iOS.
A while ago, you mentioned computer safe, putting things in a computer safe. What is that?
It's a safe. It's an actual physical safe.
Yeah.
With a combination on the front.
But most most regular safes are not fireproof, they're not data proof. Temperatures can exceed 1,000 degrees in a fire, and things in the safe would melt, and your platters will melt on a hard drive. So there are specific physical safes that are data ready.
Okay, I have several hard drives from older computers, Windows 7, etc., that haven't been used for an awfully long time. What's your opinion of simply backing up to those and putting them away?
I do the same thing, but it's a crapshoot because you never know when one of those drives is going to die. So I also have a cloud backup.
Okay, even if you're not using the drive and you never need to recover the information, or if you do recover it only once, is that still a crapshoot?
It's always a crapshoot. It's less of a crapshoot, but it's still a crapshoot.
Mechanical hard drives can be affected by electromagnetic radiation. So if there's like an EM source,
or they just get old.
They just get old and brittle. Yeah, the lubricating oil on the spindle will dry up and then it won't spin anymore. And they had a name for that called stiction.
Right.
So if there was a time when you would smack your hard drive to break the stiction to get them to spin again.
If you take a car and put it in a garage and don't touch it for 5 years. You going to get in and run that thing, or are you going to have to re-lube it, change the tires, do some maintenance on it before it comes out of that garage?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a hard drive. There's no magic here. That's a mechanical process. It's a mechanical product that requires either maintenance or constant use, and you can't maintain a hard drive, so it requires use until it dies.
And that's another reason to have multiple backups, because you know one is going to die. That's inevitable.
Right.
Okay.
And having a backup in the cloud means that you can get at it anywhere, anytime, because you have a service standard that you're paying for, and they will maintain those data until the point where the service goes out of business.
Okay. Are there instructions at all about converting to Google format so that you can upload non-photographic files to the Google Cloud?
Yes. You go to drive.google.com/drive/settings. Then you scroll down to uploads and check the box next to convert.
And I'll post that link in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Where will that link be posted?
Soundbites.org. If you scroll down, you'll see it under latest links heard on the show.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Once again, you've answered all my questions, and I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye, Don. Yeah. Look, there's no magic.
Everything dies.
Spinning hard drives are mechanical. They require lubrication, and that lubrication dries up over time. I suppose if you hermetically seal them in a mason jar on Funk and Wagnall's front porch, They'll last longer. God, I'm old.
Okay, hold on.
But
aren't like modern hard drives filled with helium instead of air?
Some of them are.
To cut down on that problem of lubricating.
Right, so the higher end ones.
Yeah.
The higher end ones are.
Enterprise class, yeah.
Right, but probably not the ones we're all buying.
Yeah.
So at any rate, the idea is you will lose data if you don't have multiple backups. It's that simple.
And people always are shocked. You know, why did it break? Things break. Did I do something wrong? No, things break.
Life happens.
Did you plan on tripping and falling?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
One thing before we go any further. Please, folks, when you call, and I was picking it up in my headset, once we put you on the air,
I heard that.
Please turn down your radio. You're echoing back. And we do record this broadcast. It's posted within days of it airing, so if you want to go back to it. But for the other folks and the quality of our program, please, it produces an echo. And we can hear that. We can hear ourselves talking through your phone back in your room, and it's echoing. So please, turn the radio down. We'll wait for you to do it, and then come on the air, okay?
Thank you. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Gates, New York. What's up, Brian?
Not much, guys. How are you doing?
Peachy.
Good.
Peachy.
We're talking about backups.
Backup.
I got a Chromebox. That's my main machine. I like it. I just do Chrome. I use DuckDuckGo for all that other stuff. Every once in a while, the program, I'm writing something, and it'll pop up and say, we're backing up automatically.
Yeah.
And it goes through, and it backs up about the same amount each time, 1.6 out of 15 gig. And, it saves that and then goes away.
Yep.
Where is it backing up to?
Your Google Drive.
Okay.
It's if you're logged into Google, which you have to be to use a Chromebook, it backs stuff up to that Google Drive. Go ahead.
That's in the cloud.
Yeah, that's in the cloud. Google Drive is on their server. So what's happening is it's backing up everything. It's backing up your configuration. It's backing up what programs you've got. It's backing up the data on your drive. It's backing up everything.
So that's a good thing.
Yes. And so what would happen is, and this is one of the things I love about Chromebooks, and Chromeboxes are the same thing. If you buy a new one and log in with the same username and password, give it a few minutes and it will repopulate everything that was on the old machine on the new machine.
Right. And that's where it's getting the information from.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. But I still have an external hard drive. That's good.
And yes, that's very good.
You never have too many backups.
Exactly right. That's so you've got a narrow backup. If something goes wrong with a Chromebook, you've still got your data locally. And if something happens wider, you've got the Google Drive backup.
There you go. Well, I see Dave is, I don't want to say giving you the finger, but he's got one finger up, so I'll get out of the way.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
Now, does Google do versioning? The one thing that Time Machine does is you can go back to your file 6 months ago and see what it looked like then.
Yeah, I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I looked that up during
the
break. And we're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. And with you, it is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Don't take a long break because we will see you in just a few.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, it's interesting. When you're on land, it's a freshening breeze. When you're on the water, the wind is rising. Let's head in. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Fairport, New York. What's up, Doug?
Hi, everybody. I have a backup question.
Yes.
I'm on a Mac, and I had a 2 terabyte external drive that I was using for Time Machine. What I noticed was there was only, about 60 gigabyte left on the drive, so I thought, you know, it might be time to increase the storage. So I planned on and got a 4 terabyte that I was going to use. I went on Apple site and they explained how to simply copy the backup file that was stored from the old drive to the new drive. Before I did that, I ran Disk Utility, and it seemed like there were some issues with that 2 terabyte drive. I can't remember the specifics, but I went ahead and I tried to do the copy of the backup file from the 2 to the 4, and it ran for days. Kept saying that it was preparing to copy files. I believe the one time that I checked, it had millions, but it never would finish.
Yeah, the way Time Machine works is magic. This one is magic. Uh-huh. It uses hard links, so every backup looks like your entire computer. So if your computer has 100 gigs of data on it, you've got 10 backups, that's 10 times 100. You got 20 backups, that's 20 times 100.
Oh.
So it used to be easier when your backups were a sparse image. You could copy that to a new drive, but they made a change. If your backup disk is in, this gets technical. If your backup disk is in the APFS file format, every backup is a separate volume on the disk. And it's basically impossible to copy to a new disk because it thinks every backup is the entire computer. So even though, you have a 2 terabyte drive, it thinks there's 50 terabytes of data on it. So generally what we recommend at that point is just take that old full backup drive and put it in a data safe for if you ever need to go back that far and then start a new backup on the new drive.
Okay. That's about where I'm at now. I stopped the process yesterday and then I tried to check the health of the 2 terabytes and that was running for hours and hours and never would complete either.
Yeah, because it thinks there's 100 hard drives that it has to look at.
Right. The other thing is if you're...
Disk Utility?
Generally, you wouldn't do Disk Utility on a Time Machine destination drive because it thinks every backup is a completely separate drive.
Okay.
One of the things you might think about is if you have a safe deposit box, put it in that, the backup, the 2 terabyte drive.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's probably not fire resistant, but banks are really good about having fire protection.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So technically, you could use Disk Utility to copy every image one by one by one to the new drive, but that would be more of a hassle than it's worth.
Yeah, it's got years of backup on it. So
If you've not changed anything, if you've not deleted anything from the real drive.
Yeah.
If you haven't deleted anything, your first backup on the new machine will still have everything on it anyway.
Yeah. What Time Machine will do itself is when the drive gets full, it will delete the oldest backup to make room for newer backups. Mm-hmm. Some people don't mind that. You know, I don't need to go back 5 years to see what my file was, but I might. So I start a new drive. I don't know how many drives I have waiting for me going back 40 years. Yeah, yesterday was the Macintosh's 41st birthday.
Right. I remember getting my first Mac.
Yep.
All right. Did that help?
You guys are saying, something about the bank safe deposit.
Well, if you have a safe deposit box,
that's an old thing. Is it?
It's an old thing. You still get them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can go to any place like Home Depot or that and get a safe, a fireproof
right.
Safe.
Well,
you have to be tricky about that. If you're going to put data in it, it has to be data rated.
Yeah, right. But you can go to the, I mean. Yeah. But they do sell them there, yep. And they also sell them on Amazon.
Right. Yeah, but if you've got a safe deposit box, those are also quite secure. And as Steve said, most banks don't have real problems with fires.
And one thing I would recommend, folks, if they do get one of those safes or, boxes, put it in the basement. The reason I say that, whenever a fire goes, where does most of the heat go? Up.
Oh, it burns
so
up.
So if you put it down in the basement where it's cool, any water that they're spraying on the fire is going down to keep that box cool.
So put it on top of a table or something, because then when the basement fills
or
up with water.
Or on a shelf or something else, it's safe. Right. And it will more likely survive a fire than being in a bedroom.
And let me also suggest that if you buy one with a combination, put that in your password manager.
Yep.
Because
so you don't forget.
Right. If you forget it, you're paying a locksmith to drill out the core, and that's not cheap.
A lot of them these days, safes will have an electronic combination, and when the battery dies, you can't get into it.
Right.
Yeah, you got to change the battery on them.
Yep. And if you leave the battery dead too long, then I've read stories where you would think the combination would reset to 0000.
Right.
So I used to go into stores and open safes because the default combination is 0000. So it doesn't always reset to that when the battery is dead for too long.
Okay. All right. You guys have been very helpful.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Yep.
It's usually small businesses or even big businesses that have these big disaster recovery plans, because most people, regular home users, don't think like that. But
should have a disaster recovery plan.
What if your house burns down? Well, what if your house is broken into and they steal your computers?
At RIT, we had a disaster recovery plan that we had data stored in Buffalo.
Yeah.
If both Rochester and Buffalo went, we had bigger problems.
There's a salt mine in Utica?
Salt mine in Utica. Were there.
Yeah. They use it for storage now.
Yep. We were there. So back up. All right, back to the phones. Back up to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, hi. I'm glad I tuned in today. I use a hotspot on my phone and my Chromebook, and I'm too cheap to get Wi-Fi, but that's not a story. But I get these messages from both. It'll say, waiting for Wi-Fi to back up. So my question is, I guess, if you use a hotspot, and I've got them both set to automatically back up, et cetera, et cetera. And my question is, if you're on a hotspot and either the phone or the Chromebook needs Wi-Fi to back up, then you can't do that. Is that correct?
Well, the hotspot is Wi-Fi.
But most of the backup programs won't back up on cellular, because they don't want to run up your cell bill, so there's often a checkbox to say backup anyway. But right. if your device is connected to the hotspot, then it thinks it is Wi-Fi.
Right. So you're right. Because now I'm reading, it says the device creating the hotspot is currently trying to connect to a regular Wi-Fi network to download updates or backup data before it can fully activate the hotspot feature. That's to set it up. Yeah. What we might suggest you do is, as Steve said, you can either say allow backups over, find the checkbox that lets you back up over hotspot, over cellular data as opposed to Wi-Fi, or...
Right. Yeah, I've never seen that option. I know what you mean, but sometimes, when you get a... like on your Chromebook, and rather than go down the library or whatever, for an update. If it's not a lot of gigs, I just megabytes. I just say go ahead because I'm on an unlimited. Anyway, but this is a different animal altogether. I thought it would automatically do it after you set it. You know, put all the bells and whistles in and forget about it. But every once in a while, it'll pop up and say, waiting for Wi-Fi to come. Well, geez, I'm not backed up yet. So it's kind of, I know it's about the option, but it never gives me the option to do that.
Yeah, I would suggest take it in those, when you see that, take it down to, you know, the library or buy a cup of coffee in a cafe somewhere. Use their Wi-Fi to do that backup.
Yeah, the big giant coffee shop is going to start enforcing you buy something to use their free Wi-Fi.
Well, and you should.
Which you should have been doing all along.
Right.
Yeah.
So buy a cup of coffee.
Right. No, I hear you. But if you go to the library, and that's a public Wi-Fi, that isn't a little more, what's the word? Not dangerous, but...
So in general, open Wi-Fi networks are dangerous if you do things that are not encrypted.
On your device first.
On your device first. So when you go to, for example, your bank, all those data are encrypted on your machine before they go out of your machine to the network, so you're safe.
And you usually see a little padlock in your browser icon to show you.
You used to. You don't anymore.
So now you're getting a warning when it's not secure because everything is secure these days.
Right. So you don't have to worry about it as much. I wouldn't necessarily spend a lot of time at it, but certainly for these kind of updates, it's what you need to do. So go ahead and do it.
Gotcha. Okay. I just want to check. Thanks for your help. Appreciate it.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
Have a good day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There was just an episode of Security Now. People, if you're interested in computer security, you have to listen to Security Now. It's just amazing what he finds. He found a security report with, was it hundreds of thousands of insecure email servers?
Yeah.
Because they never were to begin with. And when they added security, a lot of people never bothered turning it on. So go to your email settings. Make sure you turn on TLS. Transport layer security with password. So then your email requires your username and password to send back and forth. Because if it's not, your username and password are sent in clear.
Right.
The content of all your emails are sent in the clear, including all those, here's your one-time token to log into Amazon, and here's your reset password instructions. So that's all done in the clear. So if you use an email program like Thunderbird or Outlook or you know Apple Mail, but not a website, then you need to make sure you've turned on email encryption in your program settings.
Right, and that's when you first set up the server part.
Right. So if you've
had one of the choices will be TLS. And you should make sure that's set.
Right. If you've had your computer set up forever and You may not have been using encryption all along, so that's go check your email settings to make sure TLS is turned on.
Right. Some like Google prefer you do that. Now I don't know if
most require you do that now.
Yeah, now they do, but you know the old POP server certainly didn't.
Yep.
I know Yahoo didn't back in the day. I don't know if they do now.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I know. Okay. I know. They all allow it now. I'm not sure who requires it now.
Right. And so, be aware that your email may not be as secure as you'd like it to be. If you check your server settings, and one of the choices is TLS, and that's set, then you're okay.
Yeah.
And you will be sending encrypted stuff that's encrypted on your computer. So it's encrypted before it leaves your computer, which is the way you want it. And oh, by the way, most of those things encrypt based on your password. So if your password is 123, that's not encryption.
That's the same password I have in my luggage.
Yeah. The more complex, the more convoluted your password, the better your security. So don't don't think that your password being 123 is good.
This company found 900,000 unencrypted email servers in the U.S.
Servers.
You didn't say where.
And it has to be an email service provider, because all ISPs block port 25, so you can't run your own mail server at home unless you get a business account that will let mail servers run. So right. 900,000 unencrypted email servers are sending who knows how much unencrypted email a day. And your email is probably the most critical thing you need to have a good password on, because of all those reset password instructions and security tokens that they email you.
Oh, and by the way, I just sent you the plans for our upgrade next year, our merger with another company, or you don't want to send those in plain.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken, somewhere in Maryland.
I got a question about the Microsoft password reset code.
Yeah.
I keep getting these intermittently, not one after another, but occasionally one today, maybe one in 2 days.
Have you been trying to reset your password?
No.
Then it's someone else trying to reset your password and pretending to be you.
Or someone who
something else?
It could be someone who has a very similar email address to you, and they're typing it wrong in the reset password command.
Right. It doesn't have to be malicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wouldn't happen that infrequently, I wouldn't think. It's like a one-time thing, you think, and then it would be corrected.
Right.
But I'm getting frequent ones. I never got that before.
Right. Well, what happens is they get a whole new list of people to try against. And the fact that you have not responded is good.
Right.
That's the thing you want to do, is not respond to those. If you didn't initiate a password reset, just delete the email.
Right.
Because it's probably going to go back to someone else.
Right.
Yeah,
on the bottom of the email, it says, if you don't recognize this Microsoft account, you can click here to remove your email address from that account. I don't want to do that, do I?
Right.
No, you do not.
You be very, very careful, but you can point to that link without clicking, and it may tell you the place it's really going.
Right.
Because it's probably not Microsoft.
Right.
Right.
But so, generally speaking, if you did not initiate it,
right.
And this is for everybody, if you did not initiate a reset and you get a password reset code email, throw it away.
You think that I need to do a two-step authentication for this account to protect it more?
You absolutely should. Everybody should be using two-step to
can you do that without using a mobile device? I don't want to go into my mobile device every time I have to authenticate.
If you get text messages on your computer, you can do that.
No, I don't think so, unless I set something up.
Yeah, you'd have to have a texting program
on your
computer.
That's why I don't want to do that, because it's a lot of trouble there. You have to get your phone out every time you want to read your email.
Well, Microsoft, it's not every time. It's only when you're logging in to somewhere new, or logging in on a new device, or occasionally to re-verify that it's still you. And
right.
I know that Microsoft is moving away from text message authentication because text messages are not secure. I think I mentioned I had a client get off of Microsoft services because they're requiring Authenticator. So you have to download an Authenticator app on your phone, and you've got 30 seconds to type in that code before it changes again, which is more secure. In essence, your password is changing every 30 seconds. So bad guys, even if they get one half, they can't get the other. But it is more annoying for the user end of it.
But it is also much more secure.
Yeah.
Could it be possible that if you use the same Microsoft account on different computers, it might be causing that?
What will happen is every time you log in on a different device, the first time, it will have you authenticate. And
it
then
doesn't ask for that on my computer, but I get those messages occasionally because I use different computers.
Yeah. So there's a every now and then it asks again just to be sure, and that every now and then might, let's say, 10 days. So when you log
in. Hold on. We're talking about two different things. If you're talking about the messages that ask for a password.
Yeah, I'm talking about the messages I'm getting.
The password reset messages are fake, and you should ignore them unless you asked for a password reset. I don't care what machine you're on or where you are. If you did not ask for a reset, dump the email.
Well, that's what I've been doing. I just hope they go away eventually.
Yeah. Well, and they will. What'll happen is they've gotten a new set of email addresses, and they've got a bot that's trying to get into everyone. And at some point, the bot will say, okay, this person has not responded in X number of attempts. We're dumping them.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. Yep. It goes away for a period of time, and then sometimes it comes back.
And then you'll get on a new list, and they start trying again.
Right.
All right, long as nothing too severe to worry about, we'll let it go at that.
Exactly, Ken, exactly.
All right, thanks for the answer.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Yeah, as long as you ignore it and don't click the link.
And that's true for every single person listening. If you did not ask for a password reset code and you get a password reset code email, dump the email. It's fake. They're trying to steal your password. Again, two-factor authentication, where you use an authenticator app, is much, much safer than any other way to do authentication.
I read a really cool scam. You almost have to give them a little bit for their ingenuity. They send a fake, either fake text message notification, or in the Apple world, you get a big notification in the center of your screen. Here's a code. And then they call you on the phone, spoofing caller ID, saying, hi, we're Apple, and say, we just sent a code to your phone. There's a problem on your system. Give us that code. And because this call ID said Apple, and it's a real message, really from Apple, because they're trying to break into your account, you give them the code, and then they're in your account at the other end.
Nice.
Because if you try logging into somebody's Apple account, it will send a verification code.
But if you didn't try logging in, ignore right. the message.
Ignore it. Mm-hmm. It's not you.
Right. So
unless I'm setting up a new computer for you.
Right.
And then call me with that code because I need it.
Well, right. I've seen that too, yeah. where I'm working on a system for somebody and they've got that problem. But generally speaking, two-factor authentication is better. An authenticator app is even better. And as Steve said, it doesn't ask you all the time. It asks you when you log into a new device. When you log into a new device, it will say, do you want to trust this device? If you're in a library or someplace, you say no. But if you're at home, you say yes. When I set up my new machine, I will have to go through all of my...
Every single
program I have, and it will ask me the code. And I don't mind doing that because it means I'm more secure. It's an annoyance once.
Yeah. But then, as I was starting to say, every now and then, they sometimes do it again.
Right.
So it could be like every 10 days. And if you use multiple computers, that 10-day clock is
different. Or 10 months.
Yeah.
So it's not that often.
We notice you haven't used this computer in a while. We need you to re-log in.
Right. So multi-factor authentication and better an authenticator app. All right. That music tells us that, shockingly, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I also want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Good questions this week. A lot of information about backup. If you're not backing up, today's an excellent day to do it because you're not going to want to go outside anyway. So sit around and back up right now. In fact, you can take a week to back up, but don't put it off because we are done and we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You because we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?